Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, founder and CEO of Literal Humans, Paul David. And I'm joined today by Kavita Guy, CEO and co-founder of Nectar. And we're going to talk about building the classroom of the future today. Welcome to the pod, Kavita.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Excited to be here.
Appreciate you taking the early call in Los Angeles. How are things out there?
It's good. Can't complain. You know, I see all of my friends who are having a tough winter right now in New York, especially. And it's funny, whenever I put a sweater on and people are like, oh, are you in a cold place? And I'm like, yeah, it's freezing. It's like 65 degrees outside. So very classic LA life right now, but it's good.
Yes, indeed. I spent about 4 years of my 20s in Northern California, but I miss the weather so much being in London nowadays. So.
Yep, exactly.
And I will actually be in LA end of March, so we should grab a coffee and
chat. That's perfect.
Yeah,
I would love to. That sounds great.
We'll set that up after the pod. But I want to introduce you to our audience here who may not have heard of the good work you're doing at Nectar. So you're the CEO and co-founder of Nectar. And what you're doing there is you're transforming education by offering customizable FERPA-compliant AI assistants that integrate into learning management systems. And so providing 24/7 support for students and teachers. Real quick for our audience, what is FERPA and why is it important to be compliant?
Yeah, that's a great question. So FERPA is to education what HIPAA is to medicine. So basically for schools and institutions, they legally cannot adopt products unless they are FERPA compliant. So it essentially just means that we abide by a certain federal level standard of student data privacy and safety.
Nice. Very important. And I take that very seriously. I used to be an educator, so I take FERPA very seriously. I know all about it and appreciate that.
Awesome.
Well, I want to, you know, share a bit about your journey, which is, I think, really inspiring, and especially for someone like me with a background in education and tech for good. You founded Nectar while studying at UC Santa Barbara, and you are motivated by, you know, the challenges that you face in the education system. And since then, Nectar has raised over $6 million in funding. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And is now partnered with over 100 institutions worldwide. So yes. Let's dig into it. Would love to hear, you know, if you can share how the shift to online learning, which has been a big topic in the sort of post-COVID era, how has it changed the edtech landscape?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's interesting because my co-founder and I started building our company when he was a sophomore and I was a junior, and this was like 2018. And so we had no idea that in less than 2 years, online learning and remote learning was coming for us from COVID. But we were building basically at that time a Slack for schools type of technology. That was at the time how we figured out to best address this problem of providing 24/7 support to students. And really what we wanted to get to is this truly deeply personalized learning for every student, because that's what we felt would be most valuable to us for the amount that we were paying for school. But you know, pre-AI, the best thing that we could think of was if teachers and TAs can't be available 24/7, and we would never expect them to, then the next best thing we can do is give students access to one another in every classroom to ask and answer each other's questions and further deepen their bonds and build this network, but also know that there is always someone there 24/7 to answer your questions about the classes that you're in or what you should be doing next. And so really, when you think about remote instruction, for us, it was the silver lining of COVID was that this was the exact opportunity we needed to get Nectar launched and get it off the ground, because it really quickly went from a nice to have to I absolutely need to have some sort of communication infrastructure across my entire campus, because for the foreseeable future, that's all that my students are going to have to communicate with one another. And so what I think is most interesting is the shift in adoption. You normally hear about edtech having these insane 9 to 12 month sales cycles. And that is true. We faced that many, many times. And even when we started, UCSB told us themselves, this is a really, really hard industry to get into, especially it being your first company and your first job straight out of college. Are you sure you want to solve this problem? And I'm glad that they warned us, because they were right. It is really difficult, but I wouldn't trade this experience for the world. And, you know, post-COVID, it's interesting. One of the stats that really stuck out to me and that I still carry with me today is McKinsey had done this study of students who were sort of, I think this was around 2022, so still remote instruction happening, but sort of post-COVID. And they asked students across the nation, how did you feel about remote instruction? Contrary to what I think is popular belief, 73% of students said that they wanted some form of online learning or hybrid learning to continue. They actually appreciated having the opportunity to take some of these classes online for it to be flexible around their schedule, because I think what we're looking at now is a completely different era of what students are expecting from their college education. If you're going and paying a five-figure price tag, sometimes six figures, you should be getting that amount of value from the institution that you're going to. And that's not a one-size-fits-all education. I don't think that has ever worked before, but I think this is the first time that a door has been opened to allow for a truly personalized type of education. And that's not just in the classroom, but it's also being able to choose your schedule and decide if I want to start work while I'm in college, or if I'm a single mom who's coming back to college to finish my degree. That's where we finally created true accessibility for those folks by introducing online and remote learning. So I actually think that, again, the silver lining, we went through this really tough couple years, and the first few classes of students and teachers to go through that really suffered. You know, I remember my friends who were still at UCSB, who were seniors at the time, were devastated that they had just completely lost this in-person touch and community that they relied on. That was one of the most valuable parts of the education. But now, a few years later, what we're seeing is this was exactly what we needed to really create accessibility in higher education and allow for any type of person, no matter what your current lifestyle looks like, to go and pursue a higher education. And that's what I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that's exciting. We'd love to hear a bit more, and I'm going to ask you about the product in a second. So don't want to go too deep into product just yet, but, you know, at kind of a higher level, how Nectar is sort of different from other solutions that are out there. And like that's always the key, right? And I know you're doing some great content marketing, like differentiating yourself from other players in the sector. So what would you say are, like, you know, the two or three key differentiators for Nectar, as a company, as a product?
It's a great question. So, like I said, we had started with this Slack for Schools type of technology, and we called that Nectar Chat. And that was the best way that we could find for students to get their questions answered 24/7, right? Ask and answer from the people around you. And then for the students who answer your question, it further reinforces their own knowledge. And so we wanted it to be the main communication infrastructure across the entire campus, because if every single company has realized that email is not the best way to communicate and they've picked up Slack, we felt like these 20, 30,000 person campuses should go in the same direction. But what was interesting is once we started hearing sort of the whispers of ChatGPT and AI in 2022, we said, you know, this would be a really interesting way to solve this problem even better. So what we started with was first just introducing our AI teaching assistant, Soma. It was a feature that was inside of Nectar Chat. So within your class channel, you had this AI teaching assistant. Your teacher could go and upload the textbook, the syllabus, the assignments. And that means 24/7, the students can now go tag Soma in a question and ask anything about the class, from what's due next week to can you build me a study guide from chapters 3 through 6. And the teacher knew that they were getting accurate answers because it was based on the knowledge that they uploaded. So it was a hit. They loved this feature. And then around October of 23, Stanford GSB approached us and said, would you ever consider making an entire platform just out of these AI assistants? Because we need some way to take any LLM off the market, and especially as new and better ones continue to emerge, and then train it on our own proprietary data without having to share it back with OpenAI or Anthropic. And then we need to be able to put that inside of the LMS, either at the course, the department, the campus-wide level. And maybe we start with students and teachers, but eventually we know that admin and staff will need their own AI assistance. So really what we're looking for is AI infrastructure that scales across the entire campus that can grow with us as the AI technology continues to get better and better. So we maintain the same infrastructure and you guys help us manage the new LLM on the back end. And we said, absolutely, that sounds amazing. Because one, if Stanford is asking for it, probably a good chance that other schools need it too. And two, this is a even better way of solving the initial problem that we had of how do we provide 24/7 support to students and make their education truly, truly personalized. Before AI, we could have never imagined giving every single student their own learning partner that sat with them in every single class and was their study buddy and tutor and also writing coach and career coach. That would have been insane. And maybe the most expensive school in the entire world could afford something like that. But what we ask of teachers today is already to be not just a teacher, but a parent, an academic advisor, a career advisor, mental health support. And it's just too much. It's why we have a deficit of 300,000 teachers in the US today. And so with AI, we have the ability to really provide what I believe is a 5 to 6 figure value that students are paying for. Now, I think with AI, they are getting their money's worth. And so for us to be essentially the first movers in the market to last year deploy AI infrastructure for higher education, it gave us this really incredible opportunity to be the first ones that most schools in the US were talking to about adopting AI. We're a lot of schools' first pilot. We are a lot of schools' first AI contract. And what it's allowed us to do is scale really, really quickly, but also be able to make sure that, like you're saying, we have very clear differentiation between us and all of the other tools that are emerging on the market. And I'd say if you really had to quantify that, the first step is to make sure that this is even adoptable by schools at scale. There's a lot of tools that, you know, a single teacher could adopt in the classroom or a couple of them. But if you truly want to use AI to make an equitable and accessible campus, not just classroom, then it's the responsibility of these schools to make sure that the AI technology they adopt is put in every classroom as soon as possible. Because otherwise you're going to have this extreme disparity of some probably engineering or STEM students who have access to these AI tools in the classroom and are paying the exact same amount as a communication or a humanities major, but they don't get access to that AI. And you now have wildly different values for the same price tag. And that's just creating even further of a divide. So we really wanted to make sure, first and foremost, that our technology can be scaled and adopted campus-wide as quickly as possible. And so that's where you come into the FERPA compliance and the integration with the LMS, right? It's got to be inside of the tools that they're already using today, because we know from experience of building this at UCSB that one of the most difficult things for schools to do is figure out how do we take this technology that we maybe love, but scale it campus-wide and ensure that students and teachers are actually engaging with it over and over. We've learned from experience the only way to do that is to not ask them to go out to any other new tool, but instead take that LMS, the standard learning management system that every single school uses for their classes, and literally embed your tool inside of that page so they don't have to go anywhere new. And so I think for us to first figure out the integrations, the compliance, all of that is the reason we've been able to get campus-wide contracts and scale this quickly. And then I think the second part of it is having a team full of ex-teachers and educators who can speak their language and really get that feedback for us to understand what do they need to see inside of this product. What we're trying to do is not just build a shiny tool that sits on the shelf or sounds really good on a website or a piece of copy, but have it be something that is so deeply tied into the student and teacher experience and is something that they actually use to add unprecedented value that they themselves want to go back to it day after day. And then by virtue of that, they give us feedback as if it is this insanely important tool to them that they just can't let go of. That's where you get the best feedback from. So we host monthly feedback sessions with teachers, with students, with admin and staff, and we want them to rip it apart. Tell us everything that you hate about it. Tell us if you had a magic wand and it could be exactly what you wanted, what would that look like? And from doing now almost a year of those sessions, we've really been able to dial into what is the best way for us to build managed AI infrastructure that is purpose-built for higher education.
Yeah, you hit on so many points that resonated with me. I mean, one was like just being, having been a teacher before and, you know, having to feed the students at the start of the day. And there was a young woman who I had to keep her insulin refrigerated in my personal refrigerator in the classroom. Wow. Just all sorts of wild, you know, and the things that we ask of teachers and schools, I think, yeah, it's grown out of proportion to, you know, what their capacity is, you know, so appreciate you saying that. And the piece too, I remember being really frustrated as a teacher about constantly being sold these tools that weren't built by teachers or even in consultation with them. And so really appreciate that you've got actual educators on your team who are frankly co-designing, it sounds like, this tool, which is really, really exciting. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Appreciate the process and the care. It takes a lot of care to, you know, build something with, you know, with humility and respect for a profession. You know what I mean? So yeah, exactly. Appreciate you for that.
Totally.
Being into the product, want to hear a bit more about it as a product and like what are the standout features? Talk to me about, you know, customization of AI assistants. Would love to hear, you know, just a bit more about the feedback that you're getting from educators. Just, yeah, dig into the product and the features, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little bit of background on how Nectar AI is built and how it's used. Basically, what we wanted was for any teacher who has never even heard of ChatGPT or seen it to be able to get into the platform and within 5 minutes set up their own AI assistant for their classroom. And they should be able to create as many of them as they want. But let's start with just the basic, most commonly used, which is an AI course assistant. Basically, your AI TA or your AI tutor for your class, really to be able to take a lot of the repetitive work off of a teacher's plate of answering those questions 24/7, and then give students the ability to have this 24 personalized support that can allow them to take that content of the classroom in the direction that they prefer. If there's a student who really needs to dig in to explain the instructions to me again and again because I really just don't get it, they can sit there and do that for hours and no one's seeing those conversations. But you know that it's trained on the actual classroom material and you're getting the right answer. And then, you know, for those students who are bored, they get everything within the first 5 minutes of lecture and then they're just sort of dozing off. They're actually able to decide, this is what's really valuable to me. Let me go 10 miles deep here because I actually understand this and I just want to really get all the way into it. But most classes are one size fits all. And so we can't expect teachers to do that for each individual student. But that's where these AI assistants are able to take that job. So the way that Nectar AI is built and set up is a teacher goes in and they decide, I'm going to create an AI course assistant. They can create any assistant. Some have created like a Steve Jobs persona. And so up to you completely in your assignments and you can build those around it. But with the AI course assistant, they'll go in and first upload their syllabus, their textbook, the assignments, even lecture transcripts, basically any files they already have of their classroom. They're just going to throw into there. And then they're going to get to select how much access that AI assistant has to the LLM. So by default, we'll use GPT-4o, but any school can choose any LLM on the market that they'd like to use. So as new and better ones emerge, keep the same infrastructure, we switch it out on the back end. And so they can select general knowledge, which means that it has full and complete access to GPT-4o. So it's always going to read through their class documents first, but then go to 4o to be able to sort of fill in the blanks. And then you can also choose topic knowledge. So let's say you're not as comfortable with the entire gamut of what GPT-4o has. You want to sort of scope it down a little bit. Totally fine. You select topic knowledge. That means that the assistant is going to go and pull just the most relevant information that GPT-4o on your classroom topics. So the assistant intelligently reads it, figures out what your class is about, and just goes and pulls the most relevant sources of data on that stuff. And then there's an even lower tier of document-only knowledge. So that is, I want no access to the LLM whatsoever. I want my AI assistant to just be locked down to the documents that I've uploaded. So this is great for teachers who are maybe in, let's say, a pharmacy class, and they want to be able to go and make sure it has all of the correct medicine interaction information and that it's not pulling anything from a source that they haven't vetted themselves. Or if an admin wanted to create a FAFSA advisor that was trained on all of the financial aid documents for their campus that students could use campus-wide. So really adjustable in terms of how much access does it have to the LLM. And then the last thing that you'll do is prompting it. And this is our favorite part because it's essentially we've built this system where teachers can go in and in plain English say, this is exactly what I want my AI assistant to do, and this is what I don't want it to do. So I want it to use the Socratic method to help my students grasp concepts and figure out due dates and instructions and build study guides for the midterm and the final. But I never want you to be able to answer one of my homework problems. If a student asks you to come write the essay for them, I don't want you to be able to do that. You can even say, here's exactly how I want you to reroute that student's question if they do ask it. But basically, that allows teachers to have full autonomy over the boundaries that the AI has with their student. And that's really solving the core problem that we found when we were doing research on building Nectar AI. We built it for 6 months in private beta with Stanford GSB, Boston University Questrom School of Business, and Los Angeles Pacific University. So we really just had them pressure test it and break it. And one of the things we found is a lot of teachers have used something like ChatGPT or at least have tried it and are immediately turned off by it because they have no control over where that information is coming from. Is that actually the correct source? Is it vetted? And on top of that, they have no control over how their students are interacting with it. With ChatGPT or with Claude, they absolutely can go get the answer and have it written for them. And that's pretty easy to do. But with these Nectar AI assistants, they are told, here's exactly what I don't want you to do. And they'll listen to it. And then you get that feedback on the back end on your analytics dashboard. And I think that's the really key part of this. So you set up those assistants with your knowledge. You decide what you do and you don't want them to do. They sit right inside of your LMS for your students to use easily. And then as your students interact with them, the teacher side, you're going to get an analytics dashboard that is not going to just show you the raw conversation. We want that to stay private to the student. And also there's no teacher who's going to have the time to sit there and read through every conversation they have. But what we do pull out is sort of a heat map of here's the topics that were most asked by your students this week. And these were the ones where they particularly had trouble. So this might be something that you want to recover in next week's lecture because clearly the students this week just did not get it. And that, I think, is how we finally start to take constant student feedback and allow teachers to be able to iterate as the class is going on. We're not having them wait until the end of term surveys. They're actually seeing exactly how students are feeling and interacting with their lectures and coursework in real time without even having to ask the student, how did you feel about lecture today or how was class? You can parse it immediately from the kinds of questions that they're asking to their AI assistants. So really being able to satisfy a lot of these very deep needs that we've had for decades with just these basic AI assistants that I cannot wait to continue to grow and grow over time.
That's fantastic. I appreciate you walking me through all of that. That's really, really interesting. Want to turn to your kind of your growth strategy. I know you've got a background in content marketing. That makes two of us. And I can't help but ask, you know, about your key strategies for expanding Nectar's reach. I know that we can dig into this. We'd just love to understand, like, how do you plan to leverage, you know, existing and upcoming tech to connect with even more students and schools, you know, across the country?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have this philosophy called zones of genius. And basically what it is I tell my team, figure out whatever it is that if anyone else did that thing, it would piss you off. That's your zone of genius. Basically, it's the thing that if anyone else tried to do it, you would immediately know you're not doing it correctly. There's this little thing that I wish you would do here. Or I could do it a little bit better. If that's how you feel about things, then you should be the one doing that. That's your zone of genius. Stick to that. And if all of us stay within our zone of genius, there's not a day that will actually feel like real work because you'll be doing stuff that you're the best at and that you actually enjoy doing because you're the best at. So for me personally, that is content marketing. All things to do with sort of telling the story exactly like I am right now. And I think particularly just being a really good storyteller, that's my zone of genius. And so it was the part of growing the company that I just authentically really loved the most. I had no idea when we started 7 years ago that this would be the reason that we have a 90% inbound rate on our sales pipeline. It is pretty incredible to see that we've been able to grow this insane moat around our company just by doing really good and authentic content marketing. And I think this is speaking to kind of what the future moat of companies has to be. It's really got to be the brand around the company, because that's what people are buying. If there's a million different tools out there that all kind of do similar things, how do you differentiate yourself? And then how do you make sure that you maintain the leadership position in that state, in that market? I think the only way to do that is to have this extreme loyalty and this community around the brand that you've built. Yeah. And the best way that I've found to do that is to really authentically share the voice of the brand as far and wide as possible. So I think where that starts is figuring out, where do the majority of my purchasing deciders and my community, where do they live? And for us, that's LinkedIn. We sell directly to the vice provost, the CIO, the deans, the instructional designers, and they, out of any other platform, they live on LinkedIn. And so that's where I started. And I would just basically go talk about why I built Nectar in the first place. That's how it started. It was blog posts, it was videos that we would create, eventually started getting invited onto podcasts like this. And it became this really organic way for me to tell this story of, I was that student who sat in the back of your class that was struggling. I have my own learning disabilities. That is the reason that I'm building this today, that I believe we need a classroom of the future that is truly accessible and equitable. And that very, very deeply resonated, especially with the teachers who are using this product. You've seen this probably before, where you often have this issue where if admin adopt technology and it comes top down, teachers will push back on it a little bit because I didn't tell you I needed that tool. You're kind of just adding more work to my plate that I didn't ask for. And I totally get that. But the way that we've been able to circumvent that issue is by getting teachers bought into it through being able to tell our story. Now they're the ones going and telling their admin, I need this tool. This is something that all of us should have. Because they fully understand when I sit here and say, I am that student that is disengaged, that you can't figure out how to pull back into your classroom. That was me. That's why I'm building this technology, to save those students and all the rest of them, but the ones that really need it most. And so there's, I think, this deep trust that you have the ability to build through content marketing. And you guys talk about it with Literal Humans, that every piece of content marketing should be an opportunity for deeper human interaction. And that is exactly what we've been able to do with the content marketing strategy we've had on our socials. Is every post that we make, is it an opportunity for us to have a really great conversation, even if it's with one person? Does it incite some sort of human emotion in the people reading it? So not just, you know, AI slop that spits out statistics and really good copy about the product, but why did we build this thing? How are people using this today? And what is the data that we're getting from it? That combination of really authentic storytelling and then backing it up with data that actually proves this very emotional statement that you've made, it is a killer combination. And like I said, we have now maintained over the last year 90% plus of our sales pipeline being completely organic and inbound.
That's amazing. As folks who work in content marketing, that's really impressive. And that's what you want. Like, you don't want to be burning cash. And I say this as an agency, like, you don't want to be burning cash on, frankly, agencies and freelancers and even an in-house team that are pushing out, you know, sort of sales tactics and marketing tactics that just aren't working.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. So, and if you can educate people and build a relationship with them authentically, I think that's the goal. Sounds like you're doing it. So that's really exciting.
Thank you.
Talk to me a bit more about, like, you talked about this interaction. So talk to me a bit more about user feedback and how does that shape your product? Do you have like a dedicated channel for it? Or is it more of kind of like, let's see what teachers say at lunch kind of situation? How does that work for you all?
Yeah, great question. So I think we got really lucky stumbling into understanding how important user feedback is, especially with edtech products. When we first started Nectar at UCSB, my co-founder was a sophomore and I was a junior. And we had no idea that this was going to turn into the business that it is today. At that time, all that we wanted was to build technology that we ourselves could use in our classes before we graduated. So we thought, okay, we need to get this into every classroom as soon as possible so that we can use it ourselves. And the best way for us to do that was to literally go knock on 1,500 doors of every single classroom and professor at UCSB. And so we spent the first year quite literally just knocking down the door of every professor and begging them to use this and saying, please try this out for one class, see if it helps you answer questions and smoothen out these communication issues. And then honestly, just tell us what you hate about it. Tell us all of the things that are not working and what you do want to see in a product that would actually make you use it. And that process of getting 1,000 different pieces of feedback, some very, very strong and opinionated than others, it was an amazing opportunity for us to, I think, first build that resiliency of, it's okay if people hate your product. That's fine. It's actually a gift that someone is giving you to tell you, here's exactly why I wouldn't use this product. It doesn't mean that you need to follow every single piece of advice that they give you, but it is a pretty good indication that they're likely not the only person who's feeling that way. And if you can correct for the things that they hate, you are much closer to building something that they love. So every piece of feedback that you get is a gift. And once we realize that, we've now kept up that same culture of as often as humanly possible, which means at least once a month we're doing a feedback session. We need to hear from our users, from all three levels, the purchasing decider, so the admin and the staff, the gatekeeper, the faculty members who are actually placing it in their classroom, and then the end users, which is the students. We need to hear feedback monthly from them to understand, are the features that we're building, is the roadmap that we are prioritizing actually accurate for what their needs are? Because it can very quickly snowball into a situation where you're building what you think is cool and what you predict people are going to want, and it's not actually what people want. And I think with AI, that is a particularly dangerous trap to fall into, because the folks who are building AI, we're so immersed in it on a daily basis that you start to believe, oh, this is easy. Everybody gets this. Like, everyone's seen Claude and DeepSeek and ChatGPT, and everyone knows that Gemini just came out with this new model, and everyone knows this new quantum chip from Microsoft. No, most people are not following AI news that deeply to know every single thing that has just came out, and they're not using all of these tools on a daily basis. So if you're not constantly connecting with your users, you eventually start to become really out of touch with reality, and you start to assume that people are a lot more techie than they really are. And so in order to make AI succeed at this stage of the AI revolution, you've got to understand what the majority of people are doing with AI and what their current level of understanding is, and then shift and adapt to that. So it's why I think that feedback is the centerpiece of our company culture and has been and still is today. It's how we build every single feature inside of our product. We have what we call a rule of four. Once we hear four different people ask for the exact same thing, we know we've got to build it.
I like that. I love the quote, every piece of feedback you get is a gift. I think that speaks, you know, volumes about your product development process, your sales cycle, and just your team's overall ethos. And that actually folds nicely into content strategy, because, you know, you can turn every piece of feedback into, you know, an FAQ or, you know, a piece of content that it better informs and engages your audience.
100%.
That's awesome. And then real quick, how do you staff your marketing, your growth function? Like who are the team? How do you, you know, what does the engine look like that's driving all that great growth?
Yeah, that is an awesome question. It's probably surprising for folks, but I am all of marketing. It is literally me. And it's one of those things where, you know, we've raised over $6 million. We've got a decent sized team, but I believe that since content marketing and marketing in general is this really core part of our company, and I think of it more as storytelling. I believe that I am the chief storyteller of our company, and that's really what the role of the CEO is. It is to be the greatest evangelist of your own product and your mission. And so who better to go tell the world about what we're building and why we're doing it than me? I think it's something that's really easy to offload to, you know, even like a marketing intern. I think people see marketing as like, it's sort of a second thought. It's like a afterthought of, yeah, you know, we'll get to it eventually. If we build the right product, the people will come, right? It's a very Silicon Valley mindset of it's all about the product and how good it is. But it's really not. My co-founder and I had a lot of debates about this in the beginning of if the product is good enough, people should just show up at our door. But that's not how it happens anymore, because there's so much out there that we need to help them filter out and figure out, why do I want this product? And what I've found is that the reason that people adopt anything, it's a very emotional reason usually. And so storytelling is the way that I've been able to elicit the most emotions from the community, right? It's them hearing that I am autistic. I have ADHD. I suffered in every single classroom that I was in. That's why I built this company, so that no student ever has to go through what I did ever again in the classroom. That story is really what brings people to the table. And then they're willing to listen to what else we have. Okay, if you went through that, that's interesting. I went through something similar. I have students who are like that. What does that look like? What does that translate to into the product that you're building? So I think it's really important for me to maintain the brand voice. And what's really cool is now with AI, I can essentially take all of the posts and all of the blogs that I've ever written, feed it into ChatGPT, for example, and say, I want you to help me build content based on my specific tone and voice. So don't just write it in this like AI slop way that you usually do, but use my voice and the way that I talk and help me repurpose this video that I just did into three different pieces of content for all of these three different channels. So me plus AI has essentially allowed us to have an entire marketing team for what is a pretty decent sized and decently funded startup. Now, I know for a fact it's not going to work for very much longer, and we're going to need to bring on a team to do that. But I think that that is the best way for companies to start, you know, really build that internal brand voice yourself. And then once it's at a point where your community recognizes it, they're expecting those posts every single day, they know what to expect from your brand voice, now you can bring in a team to scale exactly what you've already done. And then it's really easy to hand it off and say, keep running with what I've already got.
Yeah, I think I love the like integrity and the, you know, sort of respect for the marketing profession in what you're saying there. And we're speaking with another founder the other day, and she was talking about, you know, vetting every single social post that goes out, and, you know, the importance of that and the critical nature of like brand integrity and brand voice.
Absolutely.
And yeah, such a hallowed, you know, for those of us in the space.
Exactly.
Would love to hear a bit more just about your journey. You know, you founded Nectar as a student at UC Santa Barbara, and that's itself an impressive feat. You've raised $6 million. Would love to hear about specific experiences during your time there or after that help you create a platform aimed at improving tech and education, improving the experience of students who are being underserved by the predominant system. Were there any pivotal moments that kind of ignited your passion that you can share with our audience?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think it started far before UCSB because, like I said, I have autism and I have ADHD. And so no classroom that I've ever been in my entire life has felt comfortable for me or my brain to be in. And then I got to college and I started paying $40,000 to be really, really uncomfortable. And that's when it finally became enough of a pain point for me that I said, either I'm going to drop out or I'm going to do something about it. And I'm so glad that I decided to stick it out and do this because, like I said, I never want any student, whether they're neurotypical or neurodivergent, doesn't matter. All of our brains are completely different. And I never want another student to feel the way that I did in the classroom. For years, I thought that I was dumb because that's what my GPA said. That's what my grade said. And I thought that that was a good indication of our intelligence. And there's this one moment that I think back to. It was the very first time that I ever failed a test. And it was in third grade. It was a multiplication exam. I still remember it vividly. And Mrs. McGraw, our teacher, she was coming back and, you know, putting our tests back on our desk. And she put mine face down. And you're a teacher. You know what that means. And so everyone else noticed it too, of why is her paper face down? And at the top of the page, in red pen, she had written, come see me after class. And I just remember this sinking feeling. My heart dropped into my feet and I thought my life was over. It was the most anxiety I'd ever felt by that point in my life. And I'm like 7 or 8. And I also went to school in the Silicon Valley, super competitive. Everyone is thinking about Stanford from kindergarten, right? And I mean, just to give you an idea, I went to all public school, but my public high school is literally a feeder school to UC Berkeley. Like we had 27 valedictorians or something like that. So it's like deeply, deeply competitive. And I remember all of the kids in my class were like, ooh, your parents are gonna kill you. And I walked home with my tail between my legs, so scared that my dad was gonna yell at me and he was gonna say I was stupid. So I walk into the door and I have this piece of paper folded up in my hands and there's just tears streaming down my face. But I'm staring at the floor and I'm silent. Like, I can't even talk. And my dad sees me and he's like, oh my God, what's wrong? Did someone bully you? What happened at school? And I just hand him this paper. And I said it under my breath. I didn't even realize he heard me, but I was like, I'm dumb. And it was just this thought that I was saying to myself. I really believed it at that point. And he looked at this paper and sees the grade and the come talk to me after class. And he looks back at me crying and he rips it up in front of me. And he walks me to the trash and we throw it away. And he turns back to me and he says, I never want you to base your intelligence off of a number that you see on a piece of paper. He said, I don't care if it's a test or if it's a report card. There is no way that a grade is going to tell you how intelligent and capable you are. That is always going to come from inside. You have got to believe that you truly are capable and intelligent, and then you will be. And that's all that you need to prove that to yourself. And he also said, I will never check your GPA ever again. And it was, first of all, insane at third grade to say that, but he never did. He never checked another report card. He never checked another grade. And he said, I'm doing this because I trust you. I trust that you are incredibly intelligent and that you will get to yourself to the school that you want to eventually, to the job that you want to eventually. I know that you are more than capable of doing that. And I'm going to prove it to you by allowing you to do that on your own. And it worked better than probably he could have even anticipated. And that moment, when I look back at it, that is where this company started. Because it was the first time that I was given permission to see the classroom differently. I was given validation that, yes, our education system is broken and it's not measuring our intelligence effectively. We are not doing assessment correctly. And then it allowed me to begin to imagine what would the perfect classroom look like for me. If we really could truly measure intelligence and help students gain the knowledge that they specifically need to be successful in the ways that they want to be, what would that look like? So when people ask me, where did Nectar start? It started in third grade.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. I appreciate you sharing it. And yeah, I can definitely relate. There's so many moments. And I feel like, you know, I've hopefully played that part with some students I've worked with. And I can remember specific, teachers, and in many cases, my parents obviously pulling me aside and having very similar conversations. One in particular, Mrs. Monteith pulled me aside in ninth grade and said, are you interested in, student government? And I'd never thought about it before. And then, fast forward a couple years later and I was president of the school and, had done all this cool stuff. But just people who see something in you and they don't just push you forward into a system that, usually isn't built for you. They help you, navigate it and sort of weave around, the different walls that'll come up and build bridges across, moats and things like that. So, exactly. So yeah,
it's great. I love that.
Also wanted to shout out to, I see you've got DECA in your experience. I was also a chapter president in my high school. So yeah.
Oh my God. Totally. That is awesome. Honestly, I attribute the reason that I'm able to speak this way today to DECA, one of the greatest experiences of my life. Oh, I love that. And I love hearing that from other folks who see it on my LinkedIn or my resume. And they're like, I did DECA too. I was there at those conferences with you. That's awesome.
I think at the time, like we actually did nationals 1 year in Anaheim. I remember that. That was a huge trip for us coming. I'm from Philadelphia. So we, you know, it was quite a way for us.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
But I remember I was in the apparel and accessories category. And like a lot of like people give me a hard time. I'm like a man in the apparel and accessories category. Yeah. But I'm like, guys, it's where all the girls are. And like at some point I was like the number 16 apparel and accessories marketing student, like in the nation. Like I just tested.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, so that's my 15 minutes of fame is number 16 apparel and accessories marketing student. And
wow.
That is
awesome. That is so cool.
Awesome. It was an awesome experience, though. And I think at the time I was like, I'm never going to use marketing or business. Like I went into education and I mm-hmm. went into, you know, more like policy type areas. And here I am running a marketing agency. So I guess it had some impact.
Exactly. It did something. I totally agree. Same thing for me. Thought that it would never turn into anything. And here I am using those skills on a daily basis. It's awesome.
Here you are. Cool.
Yep.
Well, let's round out with our quick fire round. These are just like quick punchy questions and quick punchy answers to just get to know you a little bit more on a somewhat personal level.
Sounds good.
Kind of round out our discussion. So first one, and we kind of talked about this in the pre-show. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
Yeah. It's such a tough question to answer because I get it all the time. And I think my answer is probably very different than what most people would say, which is that I very intentionally choose to not focus on anything else than what I'm building right now. Because I truly believe if there was anything that I could be doing, it should be exactly what I'm doing right now. And if that's not my answer, then I shouldn't be working on this. If my brain is thinking to what other problems could I solve, or is there something that could even be more exciting than what I'm doing now? I actually think that is one of the best indications that you don't have product market fit. And I can say that because when we were building and selling Nectar Chat, that's how it felt. I kept thinking about what else could I be building? What else could I be doing? And that's exactly how the idea of Nectar AI came about. It was a very candid conversation that my co-founder and I sat down and had where we said, is this still the best way to solve the initial problem? And the answer was no. There was a better way to solve the issue of providing 24/7 student support and a truly personalized education, and that was with AI. And so I believe that the fact that my brain doesn't even want to think of what else I could be building is a really good sign that I'm building the most exciting thing that I possibly could and that I truly do believe in the value that Nectar AI has. And I want to see this all the way through. And I think any of my investors that are listening to this are probably very happy with that answer because they want to know that you're all in on what you're building now. If I don't have 100% of my bets on Nectar, then why should anyone else?
Yeah, I'm surprised that we've not had an answer on this pod. We've done 150 almost episodes and no one's kind of said that. And I really appreciate that. I'm sure investors and your team appreciate that, you know, that laser focus.
Yeah, thank you.
Would love to hear about the tech invention right now that makes you the most excited.
Ooh, that is another tough one to answer because there is just so much. I tell people all the time, like founders that come and ask me, you know, for advice or what they should be doing, that Twitter or X is ground zero for tech innovations that are coming out because you've got Sam Altman and Satya Nadella and all of these different amazing CEOs and innovators who the second that they have a thought about what they're going to build, that's where they're putting it. And so you're literally, it's like you're sitting in a room, a fireside chat with them, and you kind of just get to hear their thoughts throughout the day. So my co-founder and I are like glued whenever we can to Twitter, to X, to just see what's happening today in the last hour, what has come out, because it's literally iterating on an hourly basis at this point. And so there's so much that we should all be excited about today. But I think what's top of mind for me is I watched this really amazing podcast that came out last week with Dwarkesh and Satya Nadella, who is the CEO at Microsoft. And it was after they had just released their Majorana quantum chip and basically came up with a new state of matter, which is incredible. And was listening to him talk about what his definition of AGI is. And I think this is something that's been really interesting to me because I feel like over the last few years, we keep moving the goalposts on what is artificial general intelligence. I think we have it right now. I have, you know, ChatGPT Pro with deep research, and it is incredible. And I really think that thing is a lot more sentient than we realize. So what does AGI actually mean? And, you know, what is this insane future that we are anticipating within the next couple of years? But what he said to me that was, I think, the most fascinating was that we have these very arbitrary benchmarks of AI intelligence right now. Like, we're like, oh, it can solve this test. It can, you know, it's PhD level. It can do all these things that humans can't, or that are, it solves these really hard problems. But the only real way to measure whether something is AGI or whether it's even, you know, this insane technology that can revolutionize the world is to actually see it measurably improve the entire world. And what that's ideally going to look like is something like 10% growth in global GDP. What he had said in that moment really shocked me, which is that over the last decade, if you look at the growth of global GDP, it's grown about 2%. And when you account for inflation, it's grown 0%. How is it possible that we have had so much technological revolution over the last decade alone, and we have not grown the global economy at all? Are we really actually innovating? Are we doing something important for the world if we're not making it better and growing and expanding on its progress every single day? Are we just telling ourselves that we're doing really cool stuff because it feels like it and everyone's doing a lot of work? But is that work really translating into anything that all of us can benefit from? I don't know. I don't think so. I think that he's absolutely right that when we see a 10% growth in global GDP year over year, that's when we have AGI. That is when all of the AI stuff that we've built actually means something for the world that you and I and everyone around us can tangibly feel and see in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
And so to bring it back to the original question, I'm very excited for all of the AI technology that's coming out. I'm incredibly excited for quantum computing to give us the compute power we need to build AGI and deploy it to the world. And I believe that when my life and your life improves in a visibly significant way on a day-to-day basis, that's when we will finally see what AI can do for us. And I think that's coming very, very soon. And I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, that's definitely exciting. Thank you for sharing that context as well. I didn't realize. And it's sort of the flip side of that question. I'm going to hold you to the quick fire. So first thing that comes to mind, short and snappy, gotcha. What makes you most concerned? What tech innovation makes you the most concerned? First thing that comes to mind.
AI. In the same way that I love it and I'm building with it and I think it's the future, it's terrifying to think that we're not educating people on what AI is and how to use it fast enough.
Yeah. And that's been like the consistent answer, you know, as you can imagine, as we ask this question. So something to keep an eye on. Who's been a literal human who's been integral to your career journey that you want to shout out?
My co-founder. I would love to shout out my co-founder for this. We both came into this with absolutely no technical experience, no experience at all. This is literally our first job that we've ever had. And to have a literal human in this world who is my exact yin to my yang, everything that I suck at, he's amazing at, and vice versa. And someone that, you know, for the first 4 years of this, it was just me and him. There was nobody else. And we grew this company together. We got each other through those tough times. It is so rare to have someone who feels like a true intellectual partner in this world, who can see the same vision that you do and build towards that future. And I thank my lucky stars every single day that I have the most incredible co-founder.
That's great. And then relatedly, what's an inspirational quote that's kind of stuck with you throughout your journey in tech?
I have so many quotes that I live by, but the one that always comes back to my mind, literally on a daily basis, is, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Uh-huh.
It is whatever you are able to allow yourself to believe about yourself that will become reality.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's really well said. Well, appreciate that boost of positivity and like confidence about setting your mind to something and just all your insights today, Kavita. This has been awesome. I think Nectar is a really fantastic example of how tech can really be built with intention, can be co-designed with educators, and can really help young people who are feeling like the system isn't built for them and the idea that it can be one day. Where can folks find out more about Nectar and kind of get involved?
Yeah, I would love to connect with folks out there, whether you're an educator and you want to use this in your classroom, or if you're just someone in tech or in the world and you want to chat. You can find us on our Nectar website. That's NECTIR.io. I am also on LinkedIn and Twitter. Our LinkedIn community is huge. That's where we're posting every day about what's going on or the next event or conference or podcast that we're at. So definitely find us on LinkedIn, find us on Twitter, reach out to me if you're interested in joining the team. I love connecting. I love talking. So please find us there.
Nice. And we'll include those links in the episode description. And just a big thank you for joining us. And thank you to our audience. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a review. Give us a 5-star rating so we can keep bringing fantastic guests like Kavita, founder and CEO of Nectar, onto the pod. So really appreciate everybody. And Kavita, thanks again for your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paul.